You are listening to Fair Enough by Art Cologne and Texte zur Kunst. Your deep dive into the global art world. Thoughtful, intentional, and always ready to play.
Hello, and welcome to Fair Enough, a podcast series by Art Cologne in collaboration with Texte zur Kunst. Fair Enough brings together artists, curators, writers, and thinkers to reflect on how art and its institutions are responding to the urgencies of our present moment. This season, marking the 35th anniversary of Texte zur Kunst, we're taking up the journal's motto for the year, "There is no art without criticism." Each episode returns to a past issue of the journal to revisit the debates it sparked and to consider how those questions continue to shape the cultural and political landscape today. Today's conversation reflects back on Texte zur Kunst's issue on figuration, which was released in June of 2021. My name is Michaela Dixon, and I am your host. And today we are joined by Tamina Ahmad-Diar, an artist whose practice revolves around an enduring fascination with color, not just as a visual element, but as a material with history, emotion, and cultural weight. Through reduced shapes and carefully balanced compositions, her work hints at landscapes or spaces while simultaneously exposing the raw, tactile presence of pigment. Ahmad-Diar explores color as a traditional, archaic even, material, an expression of the senses, and a carrier of the depth of human experience, from stillness and silence to unease, violence, or hope. For Ahmad-Diar, painting is as much a physical act as it is a contemplative one. The process of working with color, layering, scraping, revealing, mirrors that act seeing and feeling. Ahmad-Diar's practice extends beyond painting into textiles too, portraiture, and even interactions with food, broadening her exploration of cultural narratives and materiality. A deep curiosity about movement, both physical and historical, further informs Ahmad-Diar's work. The migrations of people, the exchanges of goods and ideas, and the shifting landscapes of human existence all resonate within the study of color and form. Whether referencing trade routes, histories, or personal memories, Ahmad-Diar's work captures the rich and often complex relationship between material, nature, and identity across time. Tamina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
The first question I wanted to ask you was a bit about your current studio rhythms. What are you currently working on at the moment?
So I just came back from Los Angeles, where I spent the last 5 weeks just traveling and also working a little bit. But yeah, I would say in general, my work is always an extension of, you know, all the whole process that I'm working on since like a couple of years. I've been digging very deep into the idea of landscape and color, obviously. So that's been going on for many years now. And I didn't really plan to make work specifically in Los Angeles, but of course the landscape thing came up, and then I started making some paperworks in a friend's studio, which was really nice. Also because I was there so long, I had to do something. And I did this book, which also is something that I love to do when I travel, just to get a different, maybe a more playful way around my own work, have very much distance to my studio practice that I have at home. And be a little more free about it. And so the things that come up, and I guess will be coming up in the next weeks, like the usual questions around landscape, around color, and painting in general.
How do you, these books that you make when you travel, you see them kind of like as works in their own rights? They're like all on paper. It's all like a painting or like watercolors on paper. You see them like as like studies, or you see them as like finished works? Or how do you see them?
I actually see the books as a work. I mean, the physicality of them and the material is it's very own thing. So it's not, I mean, in general, I never think of paperwork as studies because that's not how I work. They're very individual and they stand for themselves. But of course, there's a relationship to my paintings, but not as a sketch, more like I can do anything on paper. And I feel very free in that. I can be very, very in apostrophes, but more or less realistic or, figurative in that view,
Totally.
which I slowly begin also to be in my painting, but far, far away still.
What do you think the relationship in your work, let's say in the past, has been between like figuration and abstraction? So let's say like in these books, which are rather, or like the one I've seen in the past, when you were doing a residency on Fogo Island, one of the things that I remember about it was like this like work or this like painting of the Ford Ranger that the artists are given, which like I in particular was like very much a fan of. Also like this iconic red truck, very always really drawn to. But I remember when I saw it in your book, it was like a very particular moment for me because of how much I loved that too, and to see it also like show up in other people's, not even imagination, but like that it's like a recurring theme was nice. And also did to see this kind of like, I liked the book so much because I also thought it was a really nice way of representing these like slices of life on the island in a way that also felt really like uninhibited, you know, really like direct, really like really snapshots. But in your paintings, in your like larger scale paintings, it seems like the figure or like this idea of the figure is much less present in particular, or figuration in general, let's say.
I'm really glad that it made you feel this way because, for once, maybe the books are also like a journal, like a travel documentation. But at the same time, both the paperwork and the paintings on canvas, I want to somehow make people feel something, and the same way that you felt about the truck, which is, you might call it sentimental or, seeing something you recognize that makes you feel a certain way. I think, can also happen with very, abstract color, just having a certain vibe or a certain feel to it. And we always look for stuff that we can relate to, right? And the difference between figurative and more abstract things, and I always had this really bad relationship to the word abstract because, in painting, I mean, I understand that it makes sense, but for me, color is something really real and it's very concrete, and it's a language. So, of course, when you see something that you recognize, like a car, you have a lot of associations, but in color, we have also a lot of associations, and we also have a lot of things that they make us feel that we can't even express in words. So this is what fascinates me about color in general, is its own language, and you cannot really explain it. And also talking about it is difficult, but that's probably also why I like to talk about it in terms of its materiality and process. But at the end of the day, it's, as stupid as it may sound, it's very emotional too.
Do you think in a way like the characteristic of color in your work is almost like a subject, let's say, like it's a subject in itself? Does that make sense?
Yeah, partly that's one side of it. Another side of it is definitely something natural, which is the landscapey side to it, which I think always has been the case in art or painting history. And the other part even might be like an intellectual side, where we think about color as something that always has had like a difficult reception in culture or in society, especially in Western culture, where it's often seen as something second,
To like a the form of something, let's say.
exactly, the motive and the form and the composition comes first, and then comes to color. The color is something decorative, something maybe even childish, to like primal, whatever. And also, I've been reading this book lately, Chromophobia, which is very interesting because it talks about that much better than I can talk about it, of course.
No.
That in Western art history, it's just this idea that, like, language being black and white in a way, like figuratively, but also actually, this is the more serious, the more intellectual art. And especially in the last century, where art has been like very conceptual, like very black and white. And then there's color, which is referred to Eastern, maybe, I don't know, sexual or homosexual, even childish, funny, whatever, but nothing serious. And so, yeah, there's this side to it, which I think is very interesting concerning how I refer to my own history, also how I got to start to work with pigments, also comes from my own like background. Because I was born in Afghanistan, and when I traveled to Afghanistan, I dealt with lapis lazuli and looked at it in a different way. I always knew this stone existed because every Afghan is very proud of it. But I studied in Düsseldorf, and I traveled there, and I brought back some lapis lazuli pigment, which is considered like one of the most expensive pigments, and was used in the Renaissance by a very successful artist. So it's like, where does color come from? How has it moved in history? And yeah, what does it mean?
When you're starting like a painting, you said like you're really in a way beginning from like a landscape in particular. In your mind, is it a landscape that's concrete that comes from like a certain place? Is it more like imagined landscapes? Like you talk about LA, but I wonder, even like looking at your works now in the studio, I kind of wonder what shape of the landscape I think are you reflecting or are you beginning with in particular?
Yeah, a very simple one. I mean, in the end, it's like, yeah, maybe it's also an idea of landscape, horizontal lines. When I was in Fogo Island, for instance, I looked at the sea all day because I had this beautiful studio, and I had this just horizontal seascape in front of my window. And so this became a very interesting part of my work, even though when I arrived there, I promised that I wouldn't paint the sea and I wouldn't paint the sky.
That's so funny.
I started doing these portraits and, whatever, like the truck or whatever, and I just wanted to get away from landscape. But then I don't know, also, I did a lot of research that time about landscape painting and history. And I looked at all those Turners and Constables and the Hudson River School, the Americans, and thought about the idea of landscape and what it means in all these different contexts, like be it political, social, and also art historical, So I embraced it at some point.
Do you think is that like an interest that you've had in a way as you mentioned, what's so interesting about like the history of landscape painting is it also represents kind of like enclosure somehow, or not always, but it can talk a lot about like lands, which are of course like really dramatically changed by like humans in lots of different formats, but also like private landscape, etc. Or, you know, I was looking recently at I was reading quite an interesting book by TJ Clark, who's an art historian, called The Site of Death, and he looks at the paintings of Nicolas Poussin.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh
So
yeah.
this like
Good.
very this quite like, you know, it's a very art historical book, but it's interesting at the level of like the detail that's talking about like the in construction of these kind of paintings is, yeah, I mean there's a political level, but it's also reflected in a very the way that it's handled is very not only detailed, but it's also like there's a manipulation that's going on even like at the level of the painting that's quite interesting.
Yeah, I think the French ones, which also have their own interesting sub evolution in landscape painting, you know, starting with Poussin and also then going further, like Rousseau and then Courbet, which I looked at a little bit because then things start to get a little more loose and, you know, much less detailed, and then at some point you end up with the impressionists. But those details, yeah, I think there's also this like political level to it. You know, there's some kind of propaganda, even I would say, which I also see like in the Hudson River School. You know, there's like this wide open landscape that is very, that has to be conquered or that has been conquered. And I mean, it's probably not a coincidence that this is the centuries where a lot of colonization happened also by French, you know. And yeah, I think I mean, yeah, I'm pretty sure that these are the ways that we can look at it. We don't have to, I mean, we don't have to have know this, but when you look at history that way, then it kind of makes sense why, when, what happened.
No, indeed. In the lead up today, I was reading a lot about, I was reading this text that's in the text or configuration issue. And there was, it's kind of a question a lot about abstraction, but particularly about like how abstraction is animated. And a few, like maybe it'll be, this is kind of an interesting quote to read from this essay by Robert Slifkin about abstract animism. He writes, "One might say that the modern work of art was an abstract figure, an existential surrogate for the viewer's selfhood, and a mirror upon which the self could be projected, understood, and possibly cultivated." I think he in particular is talking a lot about like this change at some point between like, you know, in the 20th century of like people asking, what is the painting about? And then people pushing back on that saying, well, like what are you about? What are you about? Like just this question of like aboutness that kind of changes even like between like more, let's say, historical paintings of landscapes and then now kind of how things have devolved, which is a bit more not even just subjective, but also that like there's a relationship to a viewer, it seems like that seems quite important.
Yeah, I mean, of course it is, and it's also, you know, the time where technology had shifted so much, and there was photography and all these things, and painting was not a representational thing anymore so much. And of course, that's also something that I've dealt with a lot, but I would say rather while I studied, because, you know, in Düsseldorf, there's a lot of modern history and German history and modern art and so on. And in terms of my own work, of course, there are references, or maybe there's like similarities or parallels that you can see. But it's, yeah, it's more like probably from the less abstract painters I am inspired more, to be honest, which I don't know why that is, but Also, like when I think of the 20th century, I think of, also some Americans that embrace landscape in a different way, like Milton Avery or someone,
Interesting.
It goes in the abstract direction, but it still has a reference.
Yeah.
Or like Diepenkorn or Mary Heilman. These are all, painters who embrace the space that holds both, abstraction and
Yeah, kind of like figuration or this relationship to like landscape art.
representation. And the ones that are like you say projection screens or whatever, like maybe the abstract expression is also I never really related to them as much, even though people say a lot that my work reminds them of certain
Of this,
painters of that time. And it's okay. I can't deny it that it looks a little bit like.
How do you respond to that though, in a way, or like how do you?
I just say that, well, that's not what I'm into, but I mean, I don't want to dictate what people think, I can't. And I'm not like, I don't mind, It's just, I just, it doesn't interest me as much. I think because I see myself in the space between.
How did your time in Düsseldorf like impact or like sort of impact or like form your practice as an artist or as like a painter in particular?
Düsseldorf was so forming. Maybe because I started so young and I was I had no idea about art, not at all. But I think what was very interesting, I was in New York recently and I met a friend of a friend who is also a painter, and they said that it's always so nice to talk about painting with people from Düsseldorf,
Interesting.
which of course makes me happy. Because you get very deep very quickly,
Oh,
and
wow.
it's all about painting suddenly. And we just walked around and looked at some openings and so on. And I mean, I can go very nerdy, and maybe for some people it's a little too much, but I just love painting so much. And I think this love for painting, and also as well in a historical, as well as in a technical way, it's something that is alive in Düsseldorf. And all these hours and hours spent there talking to friends about a certain color, a certain shape. And it's not like technical like that, it's just like so alive. And it really makes such a big difference I see now, because I've been teaching in different schools, I've been meeting people of different schools, and somehow Düsseldorf seems to be this magical place. And also in Los Angeles, I met some people that I studied with, and I wasn't really close to them while studying, but I see them again, and there's this bond
Yeah,
immediately.
that's nice.
I don't know what it is and why that is so strong in Düsseldorf, but this like nonstop 24/7 hanging around the school, talking about your work, but also being some kind of chosen family to each other. Makes it all so intense. And there's just also a lot of appreciation for painting, obviously, because it's a very traditional school with a lot of, I mean, they also have Josef Beuys and the tradition of the conceptual 20th century, but they also have like this big names, and they have this great professors teaching there. So there's a lot about, appreciation about painting. On the other side, I have to remember that as long as I studied, I never wanted to be a painter.
Really?
And I always thought that I would end up being something else, or I
Wow.
hoped, and I never embraced it until I
Oh,
graduated.
wow. What did you think you would be
I
like?
don't know, something more cool or more like, intellectual at the end of the day, because I also, some part of me was like refused to think of it as the right approach to tackle contemporary questions, to not be smart enough and not be like on point enough. And yeah, but I guess, yeah, I'm.
How did you manage to resolve those contradictions, I guess, or it just became clear to you that it was the right format for the line of questioning, or
Yeah, I guess it's just it's a process, in the last years I noticed that there's so much more to it. And also a lot about it is time, because painting really takes time. You really need to do it a couple of years or decades to understand what you're doing, and also to understand the different layers of it. And to understand why it has been what humankind has been doing, not only for centuries, but also like since primal times, what does that mean? What does material mean? I think the materiality is also a big part of it. The physicality is a big part of it. And understanding all this helped me to feel like, okay, it's not just what you see.
No. How do you find like this new generation is dealing with like the complexities of painting, which I think is special because, as you say, it is like, the oldest, it's really like the oldest form of art, but that also brings with it like such a particular canon to work from, which I think for some people is almost like too much to bear somehow.
Well, I mean, I try to think of what I saw recently. There's a lot of figuration for sure, but that's always been the case. In Düsseldorf, there was also much more figuration around me and much more loud and colorful and extreme than what I did.
Why do you think that was? It just was like a response to that present moment, or?
Well, I think that's something that just always is there, It's always a good way to tell stories,
That's
and
true.
to talk about narratives. And I love figuration too, I think there's a lot of poetry about it, if you do it well, and find your own voice within that. And there's always these trends and hypes, Now that I'm in it for like, let's say, more or less 15 years, I can see that it always shifts, like figuration today, abstraction tomorrow, and it goes back and forth. And it's a big relief, because now I see that, just stick to whatever feels right to you. The next trend might not be what you're interested in, but at some point it's like cycle. It's
It's very
cycle.
cyclical, for sure. As your work is like really tied to material pigment, and I read something online also about like emptiness, which I think is kind of an interesting characteristic in the landscapes. It's true, like they can be seen as kind of fairly like absent landscapes, which is maybe also when I was talking earlier a bit about like this idea of like the mirror, the sort of like where the viewer kind of inserts themselves. It's an interesting kind of relationship between also like I wouldn't call it like a landscape of emptiness, but there's like an emotional context or something there, which I think can be quite interesting. But would you describe how you prepare your surfaces and your approach to pigment?
Yeah, but I also want to say about something to this emptiness feeling. Because once a friend said, they seem lonely, or it seems like you're all alone in the world. And which could be a good like a joke that maybe they are figurative, but there's just no one there and they're empty. Yeah, but I don't know. It's yeah, so as I told you, the whole pigment thing for me came up when I did like this sort of self organized residency to Kabul, to Afghanistan, when I was studying. And I came up with these pigments, and then I started mixing them myself. I used a very old traditional technique, which involves glue that is made out of animal skin and bones. And That's why I can also control like the translucentness, but also the brilliance, and really keep it so saturated and everything. I have more or less a simplified or reduced shape of the composition in mind. And I often start with one color, obviously, which serves more or less as a background. And it's very important, though, to set it in a very intentional way, because as it is translucent, it's like the brush strokes are visible, and the different shapes and shades are like all visible. So I guess I do it with awareness and try not to rush into it, but I'm also a very impatient person, so a lot of mistakes happen along the way, and then in the end there's a lot of layering and trying to to go around it and have this very simple landscape form turn into something li alive, because the more I control it, the less it lives, and the more boring it gets.
You think like at the level of almost like gesture in how the paintings are being made too, like you think this is sort of a way that they feel alive, like
Yeah, and also to see how the color behaves, because I mean, I didn't invent the color and I didn't make the pigment. I make the paint, but and decide which colors to combine and which colors look good next to each other or look a certain way. But it's a lot about light too, you know. How does the light between the layers still open up a different space and still, you know, is brilliant? And you know, I don't know, it's just a lot of it is also
I was
spontaneous.
gonna ask, like, is it, do you feel like it's quite like intuitive somehow, like the process?
Yeah, but I mean, intuition means that it's a lot of experience, you know. If you have done it so much, then you kind of also know what to expect.
Yeah, it's interesting, I guess, even when you were talking earlier about like lapis lazuli, this kind of question of like of movement too. So it's like movement of of movement of colors in general, how they're how they come from certain parts of the world, they are expensive, or even like I read a text a long time ago that was about how the Greeks would get purple, like ancient Greeks to find purple had to like kill a specific fish from this fish, then they named also like the color after the fish. So you have this kind of relationship between like language, of course, but also movement and like reproductions of colors also symbolically too. So like blue being, of course, or lapis lazuli being such an expensive pigment for a long time because it was also this kind of this very, sought after color. Also ha ends up having these reflections back to a question of economy as well, like movement, economy, trade, which is interesting in paintings too, that deal, like landscape painting, as we were talking about earlier, deals in such a representational register often, or can, like especially historic. I wonder.
But also ecology, you know, like geology, because where does these pigments come from? They come from the stones, from the rocks, from the mountains. And then again, we are in landscape. And then we again think about painting landscape, like we use them to paint themselves, kind of.
Have you ever, I suppose, depicted like a cityscape ever in a painting?
Yeah.
And how did it end up looking?
Like it's more of my paperworks, and it is, I mean, recently I did a lot of cityscapes in Los Angeles. Yeah, I mean, I guess it looks like I do things in general, like very blurry, very washed out, inky, watercolory. And from far away, which is what I like, you know, I like the far away view and I like the close up. There's nothing really in between. Yeah.
Do you think it's a question of like, why are you interested in like the faraway view and the close-up view, but not the middle?
Well, that's a good question. It's also the same question, maybe why, when I do portraits, for instance, which I also do for a couple of years now, I just paint the face, or at least not like there's not so much background or noise around it. Maybe that would be also why I'm interested in close-ups. You know, I really want to point out something. And the far away view is maybe, yeah, more like having an overview, I guess.
Do you think your relationship to painting has changed a lot since you started studying Düsseldorf?
No.
You think it's been quite like consistent?
Yeah.
It's quite special somehow to have a really like consistent practice, hasn't?
Yeah, but I understand it much better. I think when I started, I didn't know what I was doing whatsoever. And for the longest time.
And you think you can see that in the works from that era somehow?
That I didn't know.
Yeah, or like that
No, I think some of my best works actually were the
from
ones
that.
that
Wow.
I
Like there was like
wanted
a
to make.
naiveness or something, or like a,
Beginner's luck.
which is real, I think.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's more direct models. When you know a lot, you can get also in the way of it, trying too hard, you know.
For sure.
But yeah, I think from the beginning, I always painted what was around me. And it was oftentimes also like architectural and space and rooms, which also I did like. When I graduated and after this for a while, there were like these empty rooms and very geometrical and more rigid than now. But I always was very reduced. And that's what I mean when I say everyone around me was so loud and so full. And maybe also this refers to the perspective, like, why not in between? Why far away or why close up? I'm interested in looking at stuff and not in the, maybe not so much in the narration or in the, there is a story, but the story is more about catching the essence of something that can tell you a story, you know, you can look at a stone and it tells you a story and you try to get the essence out of it. But all the noise and all the circus and all the, you know, a scene like you would see it in a Kirchner painting, you know, or you could see it like in one of the paintings that one of the male professors in Düsseldorf made, you know, pick work, whoever you want. It's probably more fun and more entertaining in a way that it's like a movie scene or something. Yeah, but that just wasn't me.
Yeah, how do you characterize your relationship to, I guess, the framework of like conceptual painting in particular? You see yourself as being very much a part of that way of thinking?
I probably am not, because that also goes too much into the other extreme. And as I said, I see myself really in the room in between, where I also embrace the playfulness of painting, the free spirit of it. And conceptual painting maybe is a little too closed. But yeah, there are aspects about it that I can totally refer to.
To your students, what's a piece of like advice you give them, like when they're really like new, like young 18 or 19 year olds? coming into like painting. Is there a piece of advice or a kind of
Yeah,
like
just do a lot of painting. I feel like it's so underrated how much you have to work. You know, it's not like, for instance, conceptual art. And if you really want to get go ahead in painting, you have to just do a lot and just keep on doing it and get into this meditative state where you just keep on going and you understand why a certain work of like art history is also good. Understand it because you try to get there, not because you sit in a, you know, in a art history class, but because you tried it so hard. And maybe also this can be like an answer to your question, what I see in the future, like trying to really also find ways and where painting just not only in my own work but in an art historical tradition gets further and gets evolved. I don't know how that would look, but
Have there been like artists before as you started in Düsseldorf that especially inspired you, like painters in particular that you really like looked up to?
well, the ones I mentioned, I think contemporary ones, or
Yeah,
I
sure.
mean, the ones I mentioned for sure, the landscape artists. I really liked Dean Korn when I was studying, and Mary Heilman, because, as I said, they were in between these two fields, and right now, I can also appreciate a lot someone like Via Selmans, for instance. You know, she is a painter and does landscape. I don't know if you would consider her a more conceptual painter, probably. But for me, it's like very, very poetic.
Would you say there's a place like in your work in particular that's trying to explore also this like poetic dimension?
For sure, yeah. But I think poetic and philosophical goes hand in hand, and maybe that's something that I would like to get even lighter on, you know, get more sensitive on, get more like very delicate about. Because I see that there's a roughness to my work, and maybe that's also the size of the canvas and the size of the brush. And maybe that's also me, because I don't know, I'm maybe also a more, not a very fine and delicate person, but when it comes to my techniques and to how I don't know, move in the world or whatever, I'm Aries. Maybe that's a good
Explanation.
explanation, but yeah, I think. When I think of something that is poetic, there's always a delicacy to it.
Yeah, definitely. And a kind of like, yeah, finesse for
Yeah.
sure. No, certainly. How do you see, I suppose, the not the state of contemporary art, but sort of like maybe I would make it specifically about painting nowadays, like the state in general of contemporary painting, because it's quite broad, it feels nowadays, which I think is such a benefit also of this quite prolific or like a proliferation of the history of painting. But how does it feel to you, I suppose, like as a painter?
Right now, well, I mean, I feel like the whole art world is changing right now and shifting for economical reasons, political reasons, and over saturation. When I was in the US just right now, there's just so much painting. There's just so fucking much painting, and I'm a painter, and I wasn't sure what to think about that. And I think probably it will reduce because the economy has been so bad or whatever. And at the same time, there is a niche for anything right now, which is good and which I think should be. But I also suppose things will be much more in context, like in an art historical context, and not as like in the institution, you see people starting to talk about it that way again, and maybe increase criticism too. Whereas in the last years, there was a lot of talking about maybe things that go beyond the art world, that go beyond art and go into more social things, which is also good that the awareness has been raised a little more. But in the end, we're such a bubble.
I think this is a good place to like end the conversation, but thank you so much
Thank
for
you.
joining us.
Yeah, it was fun.
Thank you for listening to Fair Enough by Art Cologne and Texte zur Kunst, where ideas travel and perspectives expand. From the world's first art fair to today's conversations on modern and contemporary art. The dialogue continues every fall live in Cologne. For more information, visit artcologne.com.